Hi, I'm Peter Haddock, and welcome to a very special pre-Bauma edition of the Content with Media podcast, where I talk to digital plant manager from Balfour Beatty, Mark Crawford. I actually spoke to him at another event, Hexagon Live, earlier this year, and now it's the time for Mark to tell us all about their journey and also for people to get an insight in what they should be looking out for when you're looking around the Bauma exhibition, or after the exhibition, you'll be able to catch up with my podcasts and my other content on my channels as well. And this episode is supported by Leica Geosystems, part of Hexagon, who will also be at Bauma. And they're the machine control and 3D surveying specialists. And you can find out all about their solutions that are helping to transform the connected worksite at leica-geosystems.com.
So, Mark, you've got a great role at Balfour Beatty, and yep. One of the things that impresses me about you is actually that you do a lot of activity on social media, a lot of challenging, a lot of learning yep. and sharing. And as a tier one contractor, Balfour Beatty has got a lot to do with the industry yep. and really, really has got some strong relationships with those top tier clients, yep. you know. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about is understanding a little bit about your background so the listeners know where you've come from and then go into your role at Balfour Beatty and the challenges that face us.
First of all, thank you for having me. You are right. It's probably the first time in 2 years we've managed to sort of sit down and have a chat. My background, I used to be at Balfour Beatty, going back to sort of 2009 to 2012, and I worked in the finance department at Plant and Fleet, which is ironically back where I am now. I then sort of moved and spent 8 years at ESS, part of the VP group, their sort of safety survey and radio communications. Did some account management and sort of business analytics and everything. Moved on to Coric, so I spent a year with Coric as part of the Trimble distribution network in the UK for geospatial. And then Balfour Beatty came calling, there was an opportunity for a role, and I sort of said I'd really love to get my teeth into it. And 2.5 years later, here I am.
Fantastic. And those 2.5 years have been a really interesting and challenging period because yeah. when we talk about digital, we didn't expect your role to be digital in a pandemic where Balfour Beatty had a lot of work to do and, yeah. you know, a lot of site to manage during that process. But digital has helped you in that transformation, and I guess the transition accelerated as well, didn't it?
It massively did. So I joined in January 2020. So literally, and we were talking about a keynote yesterday from Ola, and he said, let me take you back, pick a date, 15th of January. And I went, that is literally the date I joined. And then 2 months later, we were in a pandemic. And the honest conversation with Balfour Beatty was, what was digital? What did digital mean in terms of digital plant? And an excavator is an excavator, but it's what's underneath that counts. The acceleration bit came that actually, you know, everyone went to Teams and we saw, well, we want digital a lot quicker, we need it a lot quicker, and starting to understand the data, how do we get the data, how do we move it around, and so there was a real, real hard push in terms of saying, okay, we're going to accelerate a lot of programs and a lot of the, you know, the interlinking of telematics data, for example, was a big one. We looked at a lot of body cam streaming and actually how do we bring that connectivity in and around our sites. Ultimately, that is going to feed and has been feeding into our development around connected autonomous plant, some of the survey data that I look after, and I've got a team of surveyors and engineers now as well that I'm very fortunate to manage, and they go out and collect a lot of data, and it's creating all those links and that network side of it that says, how do we move the data from the office to the field and then back to the office again so actually we can start to understand how our site's performing in a real-time manner? Real-time being an emotive topic, but as real and live as possible, I suppose. It's been a challenge. You sort of look at different people are at different stages of maturity, even within Balfour Beatty, such as the sort of the size and the scale of it. Different business units are at different stages, and what we're trying to say is from a digital perspective, we have telematics or we have the machine controller. You look at some of the scanners that we've seen here this week, and you know it's standardized technology, and my role and working with my team and the business is to very much say, well, actually we have this tool set and this digital briefcase and the hardware as a standard, and let's introduce it and let's share it so that everybody's working off a consistent platform, and that way we start to get the economies of scale and the benefits, but we have a consistent approach to capturing, transmitting and sharing that data throughout. It doesn't matter who you are, And then obviously the same, that then moves on to our clients. So the national highways, the network rails, scape frameworks, and the bigger sort of joint ventures, we have a consistent way of what we share and how we share it.
And that consistency is very important. We've had a lot of people talking this time at Hexagon Live in Las Vegas about the ISO standards. And yes, we've been talking over the waves as such about the CAP group and the national highways frameworks and their standardization.
Yep.
What you've said there, your digital briefcase, is really exciting, because in the digital briefcase, you've got all the hardware.
Yep.
Right. So, but that then creates the data.
It does,
and then it's the challenge for the software to deliver it and deliver that data in the right format. For you, what sort of work have you been doing on that so that your supply chain can come along on that journey? Because really, as a tier one contractor, you know, you've got to bring up that supply chain, haven't you?
100%. So everything we've done and everything we've been working on for the last however many years, and even before I joined Balfour, it's all about collaboration. And when I was at ESS, I was working in the supply chain to Balfour Beatty, and it was about collaboration. So a big focus on what we do is we bring the supply chain on the journey with us. There is no point in us setting objectives and aims and saying we're going to deliver A, B, and C. We're going to deliver the CAP roadmap for national highways. We can't deliver that on our own. We need our supply chain on board and working in partnership and collaboration with us, because ultimately that they underpin what we do. We own a number of our items of plant.
Yeah.
We've invested and I've bought and managed a survey fleet of equipment, which again it covers a range of it, but it's not everything that we do. Therefore, we have other suppliers, and Sunbelt and ESS are both here with us this week. And the conversations are around, okay, what are we looking at as Balfour Beatty, and how can ESS and Sunbelt then subsequently support us as our suppliers of survey equipment? So it's literally a full circle. We're here with Leica, we're here with Hexagon as the parent company, but we've also got our supply chain. So that conversation for collaboration is continuously ongoing, and understanding what the next steps might look like between us all.
And that is delivered better when you've got a roadmap, you know. Yeah. And so we talked about the CAP group there and the roadmap that National Highways has given us to net zero.
Yeah.
That forward thinking and that forward alert about what's going to happen and the stages in which you're going to take is really important now more than ever, so that you can actually get the equipment into your supply chain, because the shortage of equipment, you know, are they putting the right orders in for the right equipment that you want to use as well, isn't it?
It is, and it's an interesting one, because I think there's two sides to the equipment and the supply element is, and for us it's almost going that next stage left and having the conversations with the likes of Leica and some of the seniors that are here, saying from a Balfour Beatty or a tier, you know, a general tier one perspective, that there are other tier ones here, and we're sort of going, this is what we're looking at as part of our roadmap, because this is what National Highways are setting to us. And in order for National Highways to achieve their roadmap, they need all their tier ones in that place, which means that actually Balfour Beatty need to achieve that, you know, the National Highways roadmap probably a couple of years in advance, because we've got to allow for everybody to be there.
Yep. Yeah.
And therefore we've got to start talking to the likes of Leica and OEMs to say, this is what we need, and we need you to go away and build or think about designing and releasing in the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. We share that and again collaborate with the supply chain to say, okay, this is what we're asking for, so you need to think about that's going to come into your business for you to supply us, for us to. So it's literally walking it back from that date of compliance and saying, okay, how do we manage the supply chain process all the way through? Not just from suppliers giving it to us and them ordering it, but actually the OEM making it. And that's the bigger challenge, is effectively they've got to speculate to accumulate, because we're sort of going at it, you know, it's going to come, we're going to need it.
Yeah.
I can't give you a purchase order for something today that you've not already designed, but you know, we've got to get OEMs into that forward and innovative thinking mindset, which traditionally in the construction industries it has been a challenge. So
yes, you're talking there really about making traditional businesses disruptors.
Yeah,
disruptor star businesses, and we've actually talked about that in some of the big presentations here that the Hexagon team have made in a global sense, not just for the earthworks community, but for other areas like mining. That they're disrupting their own technology that they've made.
Absolutely.
And that mindset's really important because, you know, what we're seeing is so much change in the fabric of what we're doing. So now we can get all these point clouds, we get all this data, we can store it, we can share it, we can also build with it. And one of the frustrations I know that's been from a tier one contractor perspective and from a client perspective is actually we haven't been designing and using that data for the machines or the robots, as people call them, to actually deliver that into a sort of semi-autonomous road to autonomy sense. And today I had a lovely phrase from Magnus, one of the senior people here, about the autonomous ecosystem.
Yes.
And that is something that must be, you know, a big thing for you.
It absolutely is, and it's interesting because I think, you know, it's well documented that some machine control is there and machine guidance has been around for 20, 25 years, probably longer, and you know, we're all talking about semi-autonomy and machine control and then full automation, but actually, you know, the design that we currently get isn't appropriate. It doesn't have the enough information or level of detail or the different layers that we need and things like that. So the again, coming back to your ISO sort of comment, it's all about the standards. So it's the same with telematics, it's the same with the sort of the levels of autonomy, it's the same with the levels of design, you know, looking at when you get into the BIM standards, and we work really hard with our design partners, and there are other elements within Balfour Beatty that work and coordinate with the supply chain sort of partnerships that we have for design and things like that. So we're trying to change those standards so that we know we'll get a design that is fit for purpose and appropriate, that we can then plug into the machines, that we can then get out to site so we can deliver that automated roadmap. So there's a lot of other roadmaps that all sort of are separate at the moment.
And spaghetti and junction of roadmaps.
Pretty much. Everyone has their own roadmap. And, you know, for me, it's about the plant, the technology, the capability and the connectivity. But for any of that to work, there's a roadmap around the sort of the design elements of it to go, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. We look at things like common coding is another conversation we've had. There's been a lot of conversation about activity and task management and planning. Jürgen, in his presentation earlier today, was talking about the sort of the earthworks productivity to say, doing the comparison of what we're planning to do versus what we're actually doing, and being able to see that and understanding that in a real time sort of environment almost. And it's really interesting. Yes, Hexagon are saying we're going to disrupt almost themselves in a way, which is great, and it's really innovative and it's really forward thinking. But I think, like you, there's a couple of things that have stood out for me today, and the one, ironically, is a digital sort of plant manager and looking after sort of a digital business is, with all the technology and all the digital and data around us, it's people that make the difference. That was something that's really stood out for me. And you know, yes, we are all going to rely on data. We're expecting it to drive our vehicles, our plant, to tell us how we're doing on a project. But actually, that people are making the difference because it's the people that are underpinning those changes and driving those changes. You know, that I've got many peers and peers in the industry, and we talk and we collaborate and go, okay, how do we do things differently? And that competition isn't there. It's more about, okay, these are the challenges we're facing. What are you facing? And we're going, we've got similarities and we're aligning. And I've been very fortunate. There's a subcontractor that's also sort of visiting and out with us who would do some work with us at the moment on some projects. And we've had some really good conversations to sort of say, well, actually, these are the challenges they're facing, and they're talking to me about it. I'm going, okay, but we're looking at this, and they're going, well, we're looking at that. I'm going, well, let's collaborate.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's some really powerful conversations and some really quick wins that we can sort of go, actually, we can go back to the UK and very quickly almost hit the ground running and really accelerate some of the stuff we're both trying to look at to solve an industry problem.
And that's why I'm so excited that, you know, live events are back.
Yes.
Because it's not just the intelligent keynote speakers it's coming out of that room like we're just doing after a launch of another product we're going to talk about with you at the moment, and it's saying, well, hold on a minute, the penny has just dropped. Somebody else comes up to you and goes, what do you think about that, Mark? Well we've been talking about that for, well, I haven't had that conversation, and all of these sort of things sort of interlink.
Definitely.
You know, I will come back to that product launch in a bit, but I want to stay on people at the moment, because, you know, we have a shortage yes. of good people in this industry. We have a huge shortage of operators. We have a perception still that this industry is, you know, dirty,
yeah.
dirty boots, out on site in the pouring rain, laying bricks, being miserable, when it's a digital environment. Yeah. They talked today about the metaverse.
Yes.
And the fact that all of this survey equipment, you know, is used in creating things, and we can create our own metaverse using it. When we change a language,
yeah.
we then start to attract different people
yeah.
into our sector. What do we need to do in your mind that says we want to attract people, but also want to retain and upskill people to not lose those people in the industry?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's an interesting one, and you're right, it's very well documented that the challenges around operators, around labour, surveyors and engineers have been a big topic, and literally everybody I've spoken to, both here and back in the UK, the first topic on most people's lips is can't get hold of enough good you know, people
yeah.
and get them in, and when you do get them, you know, how do you retain them and things like that. And I think again there was Chris made a comment in his keynote to sort of say, you know, we're talking about training, you can train people, and you know, what if you train people and they leave? But what if you don't and they stay? You're kind of limiting yourself, and it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
But actually, again, if you take off that Balfour Beatty hat or Tier 1 hat or whichever way as an employer you look at it, you look at the industry benefit. If I train somebody, obviously, preference is they stay and we retain them
Absolutely.
And we look after
yeah.
them
yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
you know, and we work hard. And talking through my team of surveyors and engineers, you know, part of the conversation they ask about is, can you know what is the training? Where can I upskill and continue to develop? So we work really hard with those guys to understand what they see as a career plan
yeah.
and what their development and progression is. Because some people want to be the rising star, and some people want to come in and do repetitive tasks, and that they have a niche preference. So it's about adopting and adjusting a training plan to an individual, but also still instilling standards. So going, okay, we've got a survey industry standard, so working with people like the Survey Association or going through it. But then we've also got the Balfour Beatty standard, so we have some individual Balfour Beatty surveying courses that the likes of Paul Howard and Andy Murphy in our highways business have worked really hard to develop, and they've been delivering those out through our apprentices and apprentices and graduates and stuff. So just combining the two. And if they do go, then actually we're making the industry a better place, because hopefully they've had that mentoring, their development, and they pass that on. And it's a sort of a domino effect almost. I think the challenge about attracting new people and changing the language is you do risk isolating existing people.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
So it's making sure that those changes are steady, but also they come with demonstrable benefits to sort of say, this is why we're doing it. And machine control is a perfect example in my eyes. Is a lot of people, you'll take machine control to them and go, we want you to start using this because we believe it's going to do this, this, and this. And you find an occasion when an operator goes, I don't need that. I've been doing this for 20, 30 years. I can do a batter, I can do
yep.
verges, and I can do earthworks and final surface trimming to millimeters. And I don't think that's ever in dispute. But like you say, we have a shortage of operators. So actually, in order for us to standardize a solution and make sure we cover everybody and everything, then we apply it to everybody. And you sort of go, okay, well, these are the benefits.
Yeah.
And then ask the more experienced people to mentor the newer drivers. And it's about, you know, Leo Quinn uses a phrase, whose shoulder do you have your hand on? So,
yeah.
And always thinking about passing that down. And it goes for the same for whether you're looking at plant operations, whether you're looking at metaverses and digital twins and IoTs and all these wonderful buzzwords and catchphrases that everybody likes to use, and you know, it's the definition of what is IoT to people, what is the metaverse, and what do you want to get out of it. And I think it's you can't change the construction industry too quickly,
yeah.
and that's some of the challenges. People want to race through a change, and then we'll often trip up. And I think it's make the changes, they need to happen, they are happening, and we see that around us this week. But it's got to be incremental. Don't try and get to level 3 before we've done levels 1 and 2. And little bits like that, I think, are the key ones.
And I think, you know, one of the other things that has scared a lot of people with digitalization is this thing of data. this thing that sort of says, well, there's a load of information here. I've got to look at that and make sense of it.
Yeah.
You know, we're now growing into a stage where data is becoming, you know, itself the disruptor. But I also think that data at the moment is being democratized.
Yeah.
And so what I love about that, and when I talk about that, is how we deliver the right package of data to the right people.
Yeah.
And not confuse them and not say, here's a load of bunch of stuff, when actually you only need this tiny portion.
Yeah.
But giving that to them in the right way, with the right language and the right understanding and training.
Yeah.
Democratizing digital is a good thing, isn't it?
It is. Within Balfour Beatty, what we do is we try and get as much data as possible.
Yeah.
And what we do is, you know, whether we need all of it or not, for the initial bit, we will do a survey. We'll use a laser scanner. And we just need maybe a couple of glass panes or a door or a wall or whatever. But what we'll do is we'll go, okay, we'll capture sort of the surrounding bits and everything like that. And then say, it's then there if we need it. So it's all about capture once and use many times. So
yeah.
I only need to capture it once, and then actually I can use it for multiple purposes, because we go, okay, we want to design off it, or we don't then need to do additional site visits and things like that. We've done it in one go. And what we've started to understand is we have the data, and I could just send that entire section over to a site or a designer, and they go, I don't know what to do with it, or it's too much. It's about specifying, what do you want? What do you need? When do you need it by? And in what format? And the format is normally the critical one. So it's about working, and again, that conversation and communication to really understand scope, requirements, expectations, and deliverables, and keep it. Or I say keep it as simple as possible, but you know, if I try to send you and send you a big point cloud, and you go, this is what I needed, but it's a big data set, and you know, we look at some data sets, and I was you look at some of the scanners and the mobile mapping solutions that are here this week, and you know, you're talking about, you know, gigabytes and terabytes and petabytes of data that potentially you're going to start to look at, and it's not just us. And if you think we're capturing it and other tier ones are capturing it, then how much data are National Highways suddenly going to have to deal with as a client? And how do we collaborate? Because we collect the data, but somebody else on a future scheme or might need some of that data. So actually, who owns the data? There's a whole host of challenges that suddenly come around data once you're starting to collect it. Not least GDPR as well, which is
absolutely
always a critical one.
I was going to say,
And look, everything we do, you know, we're collecting data, but we go through the impact assessments with our InfoSec guys and our DPIA and data protection officer, and sort of go, you know, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it, this is how we're storing it, and you know, we anonymize it. Telematics data, I know what machine, but I don't know for who.
Right,
so we're really clear on that. So, you know, telematics, I can tell you what machine, where it was, who supplied it to me, do we own it, was it hired, what did it do in the day, operated, idled, fuel burn, carbon emissions. Don't know who it was, though, because that's not relevant. It's about the machine, it's about the behavior, and it's about then, again, filtering it down, saying to site, here's the key pertinent information, manage it from that way. We don't need to go out with individual names and you know, driver IDs and things like that. So
yeah, no, that's a very sensible approach. And I think, you know, for me, you've touched on the big points, the sort of issues that we've got right now relate to fuel.
Yeah,
we've all seen the change from red to white diesel.
Yep.
That came at probably the worst time in history of any change to do with fuel, when we're having a global fuel crisis, and prices are going through the roof.
Yep.
But that is part of that process, to look at the data and to understand what's happening, and to take that data and go, right, it's that machine in that space is 30% more efficient or less, or 30 to 40% idling.
Yeah.
And it's also to actually have that information to say whether that is real idling.
Yeah.
So it's there sitting, the chugging, doing nothing, or whether that is active idling, where it's actually idling because it's being loaded.
Absolutely.
For example. You know, and those sort of things, that categorization and understanding, using GPS data as well as using onboard machine data is super, super important. And you, as a tier one contractor, also want to understand what machines work better in which environments.
Yes.
You know, and do I go from 40 to 45 ton? Do I get a hybrid excavator instead of something else? You know, and how does that all work with upskilling, training, supporting the operator community to reduce those figures? It, that in itself is very much data-driven now, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And, you know, within that, just sort of talk through, there's a number of steps and complexities in how we deal with that data. Like you sort of said, is the first step for us is we don't know what we don't know. And we've been on a journey with telematics. We're at least 2.5 years into it because it was there when I joined. So it's probably been a 3 or 4 year journey at the very least. But we're finding a place. We have all of our owned plant, all of our hired plant, and even our subcontract plant feeding into a single portal environment. So as a project manager or as a works or construction manager, we provide access to the individuals. They can log in and see their projects and what plant is on their site.
Right.
So they can see as an overall how many machines, what's my utilization, what's my idling, what's my operating time and fuel burn for the day, for the week, for the month historically, and work through it. So they can look at and start to look at proactive management and encouragement. And the first step and the biggest step value change for us is toolbox talks. It's a behavioral thing. And actually, you know, we talk about hybrid machines and we're all talking about hydrogen machines
and electric, and
where does it work? But actually, you know, they're currently where we are today in the state of, you know, what's available in the market, they become marginal gains. The biggest gain, and speaking to other, you know, plant providers and other contractors, biggest gains come out of behavioral toolbox talks and talking to your drivers and your operators and going, you know, it's not about beating you with a stick. It's about saying, okay, well, you know, you were idling or this machine was idling or this task related, you know, why? And we get the feedback and we've done some work on different projects and some of our feedback was, well, yes, I was idling. It was wet, it was cold, it was windy, and the welfare was however far away. And we went, okay, so, you know, we went away as a contractor and went, okay, we'll put additional welfare in. You know, it's about changing our site setup and our site layouts. And we're now at a point where we're thinking about future projects. We're already thinking about how do we set them out, whether it's compounds, whether it's satellites, and how do we manage that to make sure that actually there are adequate and appropriate facilities for our workforce so that they don't have to sit in the machine and idle. By the same standard, we're also challenging OEMs. So you mentioned you might be idling or active idling because you're being loaded.
Yeah.
Well, my argument would be you still shouldn't be idling.
Exactly.
There should be a stop start or an eco mode or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that comes down to, you know, an OEM redesigning their product or adding additional features in. But at the same time, if you are being loaded, then don't count that as idling. So if you have to have your machine on, then, and whether you're, you know, whether it's a telehandler, for example, dual view dumper, we have as standard on our sites, and we sort of go, if it's being loaded, so if I can say there's a payload increase going on whilst it's there, then that is not an idle machine. It is taking part in a production process. So don't count it as idling, please. And again, we're trying to challenge how the OEMs calculate and provide this data, but again, from a standard and consistent viewpoint. So there's challenges left, right, and center, but we've only started to understand these and been able to have some of these conversations once we started seeing the data to understand it and work with it.
And so, you know, for me, what's interesting about all of this is, you know, you've looked at these different elements and recognised that there is a challenge point to be made.
Yeah.
But there is that conversation that's happening now for the next generation. We're seeing, obviously, stage five engines coming in.
Yeah.
Right now, which are making a big difference to fuel consumption.
Yeah.
We're seeing telemetry also give you health data around the performance of the machine so we can get preventative maintenance in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of that comes down the line when people realize that there is a functional use for it.
As soon as you start to show that, you know, and especially with the change with red diesel to white diesel, as soon as it starts to show that if we reduce machine idling from, you know, 40% to 45 to 35 or 30%, and again, small, but on a 5%, 10% changes. If you look at the carbon saving that comes off it, if you look at the fuel cost saving that comes off it, then that's big ticket items because ultimately, the fuel cost is a bottom line cost or an operating cost to a plant hire or whichever way around, and and you look at the carbon, and we're all working towards national highways and ultimately the government's targets around, you know, beyond net zero. And Balfour Beatty have made some really bold statements about our ambitions and targets for net zero and beyond net zero. You know, they are quick wins, but again, once we've got that data and we say, we'll show you the value and show you the purpose and what we're doing. And, you know, again, you look at data and people turn around and go, it's Big Brother watching, you're watching what I'm doing and whatever. And you go, well, actually, we're not, because do you know what? We've had this data for 2 years.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, whether it's telematics data or whether it's safety systems, which again is another topic that's come up here, and, you know, the 360 cameras, and you go, well, you're just watching what I'm doing. No, we're actually there to protect our workforce, and that's whether that's physically protect them at work with barriers and boundaries, or whether we're thinking about the environment in the long term and protecting the world in which they live and the next generation and children and grandchildren. And it's things like that that we work on, and that's the power of data. You can only do something with it once you actually have it in your hands.
Yeah, and really, when you're talking about the safety systems, you know, we've got AI technology coming into that now. And when you're doing a lot of work on roads and active roads, when you're working out the roadside with the slew and height restrictions and things like that, that is also looking after the general public. And you never know when somebody's going to leap over a fence and come and say hello, do you?
No, you don't. Or if there's an incident on, like, say, if you're working on a live highway and there's an incident and, you know, it's a traffic accident, or you get traffic incursions still happening in roadworks, there are, you know, a lot of our workforce are put at risk just by being at work. And, and, you know, we work really hard to try and mitigate and remove and eliminate those factors of risk. But sometimes that means there are cameras there, ultimately to protect our workforce, not to watch them, not to Big Brother, you know, there is no Big Brother about it. We're there to protect our people and make sure that all of our employees can go home safe every day. And safety is the number one priority for us. And like say, you've got, you know, the personnel detection systems that we saw on stage today. We've got the 360 cameras, you've got the slew restrictors, and, you know, we've got autonomous braking coming into machines.
That's right.
And
which is very exciting.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we've seen some demos of that and we've gone, wow, this is really powerful. And again, it's a big change to the industry, but you can't just introduce it and go, we're now going to use this as standard. We've got to slowly think about how does that interoperate with other machines and people and barriers and, you know, a changing site environment, which is what a construction site is.
Yeah.
It was, you know, Jürgen was talking about autonomy works really well in mining. It works really well in the dockyards in Amsterdam, he mentioned earlier, and he's absolutely right. And the, you know, I look at that and go, okay, but that's a static site. You have a fixed gantry crane, you have a fixed route, and it's in and out. With a construction site, your haul roads change through the phases of construction. Site boundaries change, you put walls up, you put foundations in, you know, that site is a constantly evolving site. So how do you then manage your haul roads for, you know, compactors and ADTs to move around? And, you know, that there's some of the challenges around, you know, walking down that, you know, connected autonomous plant roadmap, and how do we achieve it? So,
and that's where the real-time thing comes in, because we are seeing, and I think we will see, the machines becoming the surveyors.
Yeah.
Because I think we will be able to have the technology that's affordable, so that the machine, as it's digging, as it's working, is collecting that data around it, not just where it's digging and underneath, and sharing that information. But that's another conversation altogether.
It is, Mark.
What I also wanted to talk to you about is all of this is actually, when you're talking about all these different changes, leads to that big topic of sustainability. And the Sustainability Supply Chain School has had a bit of a 10-year anniversary. And fundamentally, the Sustainability Supply Chain School has done something for our sector called the Plant Charter.
Yeah.
And I think what's really exciting about that is that has brought the industry together under a body that is agnostic as to who you are, what you're doing, but has the goals of challenging but also creating conversations and intelligence and sharing knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's been a big impact, hasn't it? You know, the way in which it's been supported by all tiers of the industry.
Without a shadow of a doubt, and I think it's very, you know, sustainability and the environment and the carbon emissions and things like that, it's on everybody's lips. You go to any face-to-face or you know, emails and projects, it's on, you know, tips of tongues. And we're here, you know, with a geospatial and mining and technology. A lot of their presentations and certainly a lot of the keynotes have had a massive focus around sustainability. How do we better protect our environment? How do we do things more efficiently to protect the environment? I think, again, in Ola's opening keynote yesterday, there was, you know, the carbon emission rise in the last 30 years
was horrendous.
Was exponential, yeah. On it. And you sort of go, you know, when you put numbers up on stage, you go, you know, he said, the last 30 years, ultimately everybody in the room yesterday is responsible for that in one form or another. And that's the bit that makes you sit up and think, but this is a measuring company, a Hexagon. They sensors, you know, measurements and technology rather, you know, they don't generate carbon emissions. They don't have plants and machinery.
Yeah,
battery operated equipment, but they're still talking about it. Mm. We're talking about it. We're talking about fuel alternatives, hybrids, electrics, hydrogens, and how do we do those? And again, that's the conversation we have with all the OEMs. That's the conversation we have with our supply chain. How can we find an alternative? We're going through a process with some of our contracts about moving them away from petrol and diesel hand tools to battery tools.
Yes, absolutely.
And we're, you know, so it's not just, we're looking at it at all levels because there is an impact at all levels. And the small changes we do, again, the small and gradual changes will ultimately lead to that big overall change. But yet the sustainability supply chain school and the charter that they've come out with has, and it underpins that. And, you know, everybody's on board with it. I think everybody sees the value. Everyone sees the impact. And it's, you know, everyone's trying to do what they can. Different fleets, you know, Balfour Beatty now operate a car company, Carless, which is completely hybrid and electric.
Right.
With a view,
yep,
to being fully electric in the next couple of years. So, you know, gone are the days of, as the cars get bigger or smaller, petrols and diesels. No, it's a hybrid or an electric, and they're the only options now. So, you know, we're going through that. We're trialing the electric Ford vehicles in terms of replacing our commercial fleet and things like that. So looking at all these changes, but, you know, the OEMs are working, and we're working with the OEMs to get that, but it's a slow process.
It is, and I think, you know, you've got to look at the practicalities of it. You know, construction sites aren't necessarily in city centres,
yep,
where it's easy to plug in, for example. You know, construction sites are in greenfield spaces. Got a slightly big construction site at the moment called HS2, which is in a line.
Yep.
You know, so it's not even a big space that you're building a warehouse or a housing estate, yep, or anything in. So an infrastructure in general is never going to be like that. But all of that to one side, you know, the sustainability supply chain school has, you know, helped us deliver a different way and a different approach. And I think what also is doing that, and we've mentioned it kind of at the start of this podcast, is the CAP group.
Yeah.
You know, and we're talking about here connectivity, connected work sites, or autonomous ecosystems. But why the CAP group, in my mind, has been so exciting, and I've been fortunate to be invited into the discussions with that, is that it's passionate people,
yes,
that are doing something. The people aren't just sitting there going, oh, well, we can't do that and we can do that. You know, writing simplistic messages, statements and things,
yep,
that people want to achieve that everybody gets to sign up to,
yep,
that is super easy to understand.
Definitely.
They've made some serious strides over the last few years, and that continues as we look at adoption of technology. And it's like you were saying earlier, it's not about going, well, let's get to stage three and we're only at stage one,
yeah,
but let's introduce. So we've seen machine control be mandated,
yeah,
we're now looking at, you know, a compaction based machine control, yeah, then we're going to be looking at more autonomous machines on site,
yeah,
things like that. But that level of detail and that level of industry-wide discussion is what we need if we're going to bring everybody else along with us, because otherwise we've got a big problem, haven't we?
Absolutely, and I think it comes back to sort of one of the original challenges and we sort of discussed around, you know, the collaboration piece, and you know, we sit on the calls with the CAP group and you know, the Plants and Earthworks community, and you have OEMs on there, so you have the likes of JCB and Volvo and Hitachi. You have tier ones on there, so there's ourselves, there's Balfour Beatty and a couple of stakeholders. There's Skanska and you know, the other BAM and others on there. And then you've got our supply chain, and ultimately a lot of the tier ones use similar supply chains. So, you know, the likes of Lynch and Flannery, Gap, Speedy, Sunbelt, you know, they're all on there. Because everybody needs to see what
the vision is and what the statements are, and making sure, again, we're all on the same page. There is no point us trying to set targets and standards if our supply chain aren't aware of them and can't plan and prepare for them. So for me, the CAP group's great. It really demonstrates the value of collaboration across the board. And you know, there are some big strides that have already been made, and there are some big, you know, some continuous ones going. Like I say, the roadmap's out there for CAP, and you know, it's very well published, and Mania, Annette Pass, and Wayne Bond, and everyone, you know, they're pushing at it and they're constantly challenging us. So we've sat on calls with the team, and constant updates. Where are you with this? What are you doing with this? And the elements of it, again, multiple roadmaps all coming together to go, actually, here's the one underlying roadmap of getting to connect to an autonomous plant on a highway site. So lots of challenges to go, lots of collaboration, but like you say, passionate people, and I come back, you know, it's people that make the difference.
It is. And I mean, we did have a laugh before we came and found this quiet space. You'd just been in a big launch.
Yes.
That was here for a new version of the BLK 360,
yep.
Which basically is a surveying tool.
Yeah.
And, you know, the question is, you know, how many are you ordering? What's going on? You know, but this is important. You know, it's important when you see a new product and you look at it and go, right, well, we've got to test it. We do, always do your field testing and things like that.
Yeah.
But everything's getting smaller.
Yes.
Everything's getting faster.
Yeah.
And so that means that we can do things more efficiently, and we can collect data, and we can do it safer as well when we've got
Absolutely.
Different solutions, whether something's flying in the air, somebody's reading what's underground, or something's miniaturized. So somebody's not having to carry this whole system in a backpack, you know. So the critical thing is, you know, with that product in particular, it immediately sparked conversation with you. You know, what were the thoughts that you had when you saw that product?
I mean, we've invested in a range of Leica scanners and sort of reality capture elements of it. The first one that comes to mind is, you know, obviously, again, it's a continued development, you know, from when they launched the first version in, I think it was 2017, and they've developed it through. We've looked at the BLK 360, the BLK to go. Obviously, you've now got ARC as their autonomous reality capture, and the BLK to fly. And, you know, we're looking at having the BLK to fly out on site to, again, test it, understand the data and things like that. So, really big headlines. It can do a scan, you know, quicker, it's smaller, it's lighter, it's more portable, all really good things. The key bits that, you know, we're going to spend time with and look at some of that is looking at the data.
Yeah.
Because, great, I can get it quicker, but it's all anything, and it's like anything with data, it's the quality, and it's making sure, again, I come back to that understanding what the requirement is. So this bit, the new BLK 360, will have a place. It won't do everything for everyone, but it will have a place in certain elements to do certain scans, and you know, it has a task and a place in that. So, you know, but you've got a range of it. So we still use the big HDS P40 scanner for, you know, for detailed scans and things. So it's understanding, where does it fit in that hierarchy, what's the application, what's the environment that it's optimal in. And then we can start to go, okay, well, we can improve that process by using the BLK 360 with 20-second scans, which were, you know, Jürgen mentioned. And, I mean, you think about it, a 20-second scan, you can get the photos and everything, and it's mind-blowing, but you come back to the quality of the data, and as long as the quality's there, which I'm sure, knowing Leica and Leica Geosystems and Hexagon, it will be, it's understanding where does it fit in that product portfolio to deploy it, which comes back to the conversation between people to say, what do you need, where do you need it, to what specification, and what deliverable, and then we work through. I think the key bit and the real value comes out of the workflow as well, the workflow automation, that there's been a lot of conversation here today was around, you can capture the data, but you know, they're talking about they can start to automate the processing of it, they can automate feature extraction, and currently, or you know, to date, that's a process that somebody goes out and scans, brings the data back, and then they spend a good couple of hours in front of that waiting for it to process and register itself, and then you export it, and then you've got to go through and draw out all the road lines and the fence, you know, the fence borders and you know, the overhead lines and lighting columns. Then, you know, there's been a lot of conversation around, actually, we've got technology that can do all this automatically and start to self-learn, so it enhances that process. So you know, people are very quick to go, oh, it speeds it up. It's enhancement. It's about improving the quality of what we do and accuracy. But you still need a person. You still need that person to validate and sense check and quality check it. So again, data, with all the data and all the technology making a lot of difference, you know, people are still critical to this. And, you know, that's, I think that's a really important and salient message that I think Hexagon have done really well to get out today. You know, people are still at the crux of what they're doing, but they're doing an awful lot and being more efficient about it.
And that brings me on to the final thing, which I've got to get on a recording, I'm afraid, Mark, because we've been meaning to not only meet up, but we've actually been meaning to meet up on site to actually see how digital is making a difference.
Yep.
And with us at this Hexagon Live 2022 is one of your supply chain partners called Dee Morgan, who you've been working with.
Yep.
So I'm wanting to take this podcast and say to you, what I'd like to do is come up and see one of your projects with Dee Morgan that's in my area to see how you're taking those digital challenges and working with a supply chain partner.
Yep.
Can I please come and have a look?
I'm sure it's something we can arrange. I have been speaking to the guys about it and I'm looking, you know, we're very fortunate, again, supply chain here and they're really advanced with the technology they've already got and they're using it business as usual and we're going, okay, you know, they're using it on our side and we're seeing the benefits. So let's talk about that and let's understand what's the benefit. So we're all going, we know it gives us a benefit, but let's quantify it. Let's write it down and let's show as an example, like we've been doing with telematics. Let's document it and go, here's a case study that we can do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, we were talking to them yesterday and they had their fleets through Leica Connex and they had an issue with one of their machines and he was like, it was 5 or 6 in the morning here. So, you know, the UK is then eight hours ahead. And he was like, he said, I was dialed into my machine through Connex or through the Wi-Fi on his phone, fixing a machine whilst he was on the phone to whoever the operator was back in the UK. And he had the machine up and running in about 20 minutes from US.
From Vegas.
And you sort of go, you know, that's where the technology is taking us. Yeah. You know, you can fix it remotely, and we're talking about, you know, soon we'll be able to operate it remotely. So we're making the market and the industry and our projects far more accessible, but we're also able to enhance the support that we can give them. So, you know, that's the commitment we've had. So look, we've had the conversation with Morgan's. I said, look, we need to do something and absolutely we can arrange it and get you up there and make sure you get a good recording and some information showcasing out of it 100%.
Thank you very much, Mark. And thank you very much for this podcast. Definitely. Cheers.
Thank you very much for having me.
Wow, that was absolutely fantastic to hear from Mark Crawford and all of the insights he's just given me and the listeners. And I think it's really apt that I'm going to be at Bauma in a week's time where I'll be able to find out more about the digital world and the plant world and how it's coming together. And you can also find out more about how Leica Geosystems is supporting that transition at Leica-Geosystems.com. And once again, I thank the team for supporting this podcast. It's been a fantastic experience for me. And of course, if you enjoyed this episode as well, please share it with your colleagues. And until the next time, folks, goodbye.